south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's get into some polemics here. Polemics meaning controversy. Even sometimes meaning a scathing attack on someone else's principles or opinions. So let's start with this email. It says, Johnny, I was listening to your show a couple of weeks ago that had a Canadian girl on it complaining about having to pay and file Canadian taxes on income generated outside of Canada. Well, I hate to tell you this, Johnny, but Canadians ain't the only ones getting screwed on taxes on income coming from outside sources. Don't know if you knew this, and I hate to tell you, but if you're a resident of certain U.S. states, you have to pay state taxes even if you don't live there anymore. How's that for fair? Turns out, and this is going to piss you off, there are about four U.S. states that are notorious for being difficult to divorce oneself from. Don't think you can just pick up and leave. That won't work because they got you by the short hairs. My state particularly, though I don't know why I'm calling it my state. It's mostly the other way around. So, quote, my state, South Carolina, is one of these. I'm trying to remember the other three. I know California is one too. You can look up the other ones if you wish. But in order to divorce myself from the fine state of South Carolina, and I mean fine as in getting fined, I have to cut all ties from the state before I move abroad. That means I first must surrender my voter ID card. No biggie, he says. Oh, such a hardship, huh? Not to be able to vote for a succession of lard-ass, pustulant carbuckles. Oh, the pain to give up such a sacred right. But I also have to give up my South Carolina driver's license, sell any property that I own, including all cars, boats, homes, or any other real property. Also, you can't have any bank accounts or investments located in my fine state. Worse yet, though it is a matter of opinion, South Carolina can also make you pay taxes if you have family links here as well. Their view is that if you have a reason to return back home to your state, you've got family members living there, for example. I guess they want me to divorce myself from my own family as well. Hey, wait a minute. Not a bad idea. We've all got a few in the family we wouldn't mind severing ties with. I'm sure you have a few too. I know. Sure, there are ways to work around anything. Like, for example, moving temporarily to a no-state tax zone like Florida, Nevada, or Alaska before you eventually move overseas. But that's a real pain, moving twice. A lot of extra time, planning, and money, et cetera, et cetera. So, amazingly, and it defies all logic, South Carolina does not recognize moving to a foreign address as actually moving away from the state. Yep, they want to own you and milk you forever. Even crazier, but crazy is normal for government, they only recognize moving to another U.S. state as permanently leaving the state. So there you have it, Johnny, my tax story, and I bet you didn't know. A state could physically own you and claim you, even though you're not there anymore. Yep, and even when you're dead, like vampires, they suck the last drops of cold blood out of you. But some might say, the eternal optimist anyway, that though South Carolina taxes its residents, it's got one of the lowest tax rates of all the states that do tax. Yep, there are those eternal optimists. Just as some people look at a cow's udder and see milk, and others look at the udder and see pus. Hey, I bet you guessed that was me, Johnny, who threw that udder reference in there. Just trying to see if you're awake. Anyway, then he says, Johnny, you know, I just hate having to pay taxes on things I won't be using anymore. And get this, Johnny, did you know that South Carolina is currently pushing itself as a so-called retirement haven? Because, you know, we've got all those crystal clear Caribbean beaches, right? Who'da thunk, huh? But some are coming. In fact, we've got Yankee expats living here right now, and it's a good option for those who don't want to move overseas, I guess. Make sure, though, that you want to live here permanently, because leaving is quite difficult. Now, as for me, the bulk of my retirement income will be from South Carolina state pensions, so there's really no way I can avoid paying taxes. They're going to get me. It's baked into the pie, so there's no getting around it for me. One good thing, though, South Carolina does not tax Social Security payments, so there's a little crumb they toss our way. Of course, what I'm talking about here is state taxes, not federal taxes, but there's something else I found out concerning retirees from the U.S. Armed Forces that may apply to some of your listeners. If you're receiving a pension from, let's say, the U.S. Army, and you obtain a second passport from another country, then you lose your pension. Did you know that? That's right. You heard me correctly. If you become a naturalized citizen, you forfeit your U.S. pension. Naturally, this doesn't apply to having foreign residency and not a passport yet. But if you have a dream of getting that second passport and are a U.S. military retiree getting a pension, look out and tread carefully. So in the end, Johnny, it's not hard to be a pessimist about all this stuff. Sorry about the gloom and doom here. It doesn't exactly get me down, but it is a speed bump along the way. Just more impetus, more incentive to get the hell out of Dodge. Because it's not going to get better, you know. It's only going to get worse. All right, it's me, Johnny, here again. That was a slightly redacted version from Ramblin' Ron the Rebel. That's how he signs it. Sans F-words, expletives, with a little of my own twisted humor in the mix. So thanks for that, Ron. Oh, and by the way, Ron, I did hear tell about U.S. military guys with pensions and second passports, and here's my take on that. Actually, it's not my take. It's the cynical, I do not want to step foot back in America expat take. By the way, that's America with a K, as more and more expats are starting to refer to the place. All right, now, get this, and you didn't hear it from me. Well, I guess you did, but I'm going to tell you what certain expat military guys do. Talking about the ones getting those military pensions. They still get their residencies and move on to getting that second nationality and passport. And yet they still get their military pensions. So how's that happen? Well, they game the system a little bit because, you know, every system can be gamed to a certain point, right? All right, once again, a disclaimer here. Don't think I'm recommending this. I'm just telling you what a lot of them do. The thing is, you see, the U.S. government, America with a K, is well aware if you have obtained your residency in a third world country or any other country for that matter, because once you've been granted residency in whatever country, the immigration office of your new country will insert another page in your passport that looks exactly like the first page of your regular U.S. passport. So you'll have two pages in your passport that look sort of identical. They'll both have your photo on them with machine-readable barcodes, all your stats, etc. So, in fact, a person who's got permanent residency in, let's say, Honduras, will have those two nearly identical passport pages, but people say then, what happens when you run out of pages or your passport expires? Well, that can be confusing because Latin countries are on mañana time, and that's why you can carry both the new and the old passport around with you, because it might take a while for you to get that Latin country residency stamp in your new passport. Clear as mud, huh? So why does the Latin country or whatever country that you've obtained permanent residency in insert that extra page? The question is, why would you need it when you have that trusty little DPI card? Remember, that's a personal identity card about as big as a credit card with an RFID chip that normally doesn't work. Hey, you gotta love those lard asses in Latin government, hey? Oh, and one more thing about the page they put in your passport. Turns out it's now an integral part of your passport. It cannot be removed. So here's the reason. Turns out, if you don't have residency, they've got the 90-day rule. Well, some countries have 60 and some have 180, but you got to get the hell out of the country because you're on a tourist visa if you haven't got permanent or temporary residency. In fact, if you recall, in one of last week's shows, there was a guy that wrote about his problems with border hopping through Mexico and such because he doesn't have temporary or permanent residency in Mexico. So he's got to get the hell out every 90 to 180 days or paid fines and get on Mexico's immigration shit list. Anyway, you've got that page in your passport now so that when you go through borders, airports or ground borders, the immigration guys run it through a card reader and say, hey, this guy's okay. He doesn't have to pay a fine. He's not overstaying his visit because he's a resident. Now, he can pretty much come and go as he pleases or stay in his country of residency as long as he wants. All right, so why did I mention that? Well, it needs to be mentioned because it's part of the story, as Ramblin' Ron mentioned, about military guys losing their pensions if they get a second passport. Now, of course, you longtime listeners know, if you've been a permanent resident for a long enough time in pretty much whatever Latin country, you can apply for citizenship, nationality, and a passport. And that's the point, right? getting that second flag, that second passport. So whatever happens to your U.S. passport, and for whatever future restrictions they put on American travelers, and they're doing it all the time, you've got your ace in the hole, that second passport. But as our buddy Ramblin' Ron points out, if you're getting a military pension and you've got a second passport, they'll cut you off. But you see, if you bring that subject up to any military guy living outside the U.S. who's got two passports, he'll say, I'm getting my pension. They didn't cut me off. I don't know where that idea came from, but I keep getting mine regular-like. And there's a really good bureaucratic reason why. Because get this, the Latin country you get your second passport in doesn't report any of that information back to the U.S. Immigration Service, much less to the agencies responsible for distributing the pensions for Social Security, military, etc. In fact, all the U.S. government happens to know is that you're a resident in that country. They have no idea if you've gone all the way and got your passport, unless, of course, you use that second passport to try to enter the U.S., which is not a very good idea at all, and I'll tell you why in a future show. Anyway, about actually getting that second passport. Turns out, in every Latin country I know of, it's a completely internalized process. That kind of information never goes outside the country. Anyway, why would it? Look, would the U.S. send all the names of U.S. passport holders to, let's say, Britain or France or Russia or Nicaragua? Impossible. It's an internalized process in the United States, too. Of course, with all those Chinese and Russian hackers out there, you never know. All right, so let's go through that process now. Let's say, for example, you're in Honduras and you've run your permanent residency 5 years and you're eligible to get a passport. What you're going to need in the way of paperwork is a police report, but not from the U.S., from Honduras, because you're a resident there now and you'll be getting your police report from the local government. Of course, your Spanish probably will still suck, so your lawyer will be getting that. It costs maybe $25. And most Latin countries will also require you to get a physical, not in the U.S., but in the case of Honduras, from a médico hondureño. So as it turns out, in almost all Latin countries, once you've run your permanent residency, 3, 5, 8, 10 years, whatever the country requires, and you're eligible to get that passport nationality, it's easy enough to do, and a lot easier actually than getting temporary or permanent residency, because you have to get all your paperwork from the states then, have it notarized, certified, apostilled, and all that. Not to mention, these days, more and more Latin countries are requiring an FBI report instead of just a local sheriff's report from the states. But once you're a resident in a foreign country, let's pick Honduras again, you won't need any outside paperwork. Your lawyer will get it all internally. So what happens next is you'll have an appointment in front of a judge in court. You'll have to take a little oral test in Spanish, but your lawyer will make sure you pass that, even if your Spanish stinks. By the way, the same thing goes if you're applying for a driver's license in any Latin country. It'll be in Spanish, and if your Spanish sucks, no worries. It's a sure bet that all ladies at the driver's station will help you with the answers. I've heard that story a million times. And if you flunk the vision test, because some of the questions will be in Spanish there too, not to worry. If you get the answers wrong, they'll prompt you to get the right ones. I've been there. It happened to me. Ooh, long time ago when my Spanish was really crap too. Man, aren't you getting it by now? Isn't it funny that in every one of my shows there's at least one or maybe even 10 good examples of the Gringo Advantage? I'm sure you realize by now, the more you live, work, play, or hang out on the Gringo Tourist Trail, the weaker your Gringo Advantage. And if you, like me, live in a place where you almost never see a single Gringo for days and days, man, I'll tell you, in 101 ways, it's like being a B-grade rock star. Oh, and not so long ago, someone said, Johnny, what's a B-grade rock star? I'll tell you what it is. In fact, I was one once. It's like being a bass player in a headlining rock and roll band. Now, almost no one knows who bass players are, except for maybe four guys, McCartney, Sting, Flea, and Brian Wilson, who played bass in the Beach Boys. And most rockers don't even know that. The fact is, I don't care how big and famous a rock and roll band is, the average music lover cannot tell you who the bass player is. And in no way could he put a name to the face, even if you were in the parking lot after the gig and the guy puked all over you, which at rock concerts is always a possibility. But you see, being the bass player in a headlining rock band, you get VIP treatment wherever you go. You can double park in no parking zones. People are always buying you drinks and dinner and invite you to very cool parties in luxury homes that you'd never get invited to based on your personality alone. Problem is, most of the invites you get will be from stuck-up, entitled people. Believe me, you'll find out in time when you go to those high-end parties. Same thing goes for down here in Latin America. So really, it does get old, and if you say no often enough, you just won't get invited anymore. That's the position I'm in right now. So as a gringo off the tourist trail, you are like a B-grade rock star. That means, in a sense, you're always getting cuts to the front of the line, which is a good thing because some of the lines are 4 hours long down here. Fact is, every gringo off the tourist trail has a number of personal stories like that. In fact, when these things first start happening to you, it can be embarrassing and flattering at the same time because that kind of stuff just doesn't happen to regular people up in the States, unless you really are a B-grade rock star. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Suppose you're ex-U.S. Army getting a pension and you do get that second passport in Honduras or whatever Latin country. The fact is, the only way the U.S. government is going to find that out is if you tell them. And that would certainly entail sending a certified letter or note to the lard-ass bureaucratic slugs who are administering your military pension. Now, the fact is, you see, if you're getting a regular old Social Security or disability pension check, if you read through their mounds of crap and pamphlets that they're sending you periodically, they'll always include a notice that says, if any of the following conditions change, you must report them to continue to receive your payments. In fact, about every 6 months to a year, the Social Security and disability pension people will send you a notice to your given foreign address that says exactly this, and I'm reading from a government pamphlet now. It says, when you live outside the U.S., periodically, if you receive Social Security or any U.S. federal or state direct deposit or pension, we will periodically send you a questionnaire. Your answers will help us figure out if you still are eligible for your benefits. You return that questionnaire to the office that sent it as soon as possible. If you do not, your payments will stop. Then it says, in addition to responding to this periodically mailed questionnaire, you must notify us promptly about changes that could affect your payments. If you fail to report or deliberately make false statements, you could be penalized by a fine or imprisonment. You also may lose some of your payments if you do not report changes promptly. Then it says, listed below are the things you must report to Social Security or federal pension benefit plans in order to continuously receive your payments. Number one, you must report change of address. Two, you must report if you're outside the U.S. and working. Three, you must report if you return to work or your disability improves. Yeah, right. I bet that happens all the time and people just jump on the phone to report it. Number four, marriage. Number five, divorce or annulment. Number six, adoption of a child. Number seven, if a child leaves the care of a spouse or surviving spouse. Number eight, child nearing age 18 or the child becomes a full-time student or is disabled. Number 10, and this is important, if you die, you have to report it. Hey, by the way, I've known a few expats who've passed on to the great Plan B in the sky. Or maybe we should call it Plan C, huh? And their survivors tell me the same old story, except for cases in which you croak. If there's any other reason you want to contact your embassy, they won't even let you through the door for love or money. It'll take a couple of weeks. Because now, for any U.S. embassy or consulate, you have to make an appointment online, and that takes days and weeks. And if you phone them up, you'll either get a busy signal or a recording that says, leave a message, and they'll get back to you, but they never do. Same with emails. So bottom line, it's almost impossible to get through to your own consulate or embassy for anything. But somehow, and I've heard this story many times, if you happen to croak, your disability, U.S. pension, or Social Security checks immediately stop. So you gotta wonder, how come they're Johnny on the spot when you die, but they're Johnny with a hangover or Johnny with Montezuma's revenge on the John when it comes to anything else you might have to contact your own embassy for? Which begs the question, why is it always Johnny this and Johnny that, and not Harry on the spot or Irving be good? So how can it be that the news of an expat's death flies at lightning speed, and everything else having to do with your embassy crawls along in slow motion like a slug on a petrified turd? So have U.S. embassies gone native? Are they on mañana time too? Except for the odd case when an expat croaks? Well, I found out by hook and crook, when you croak, there's a Latin coroner's report filed almost instantly. Well, instantly in Latin American terms anyway, because according to law, the body's got to be embalmed right away and there's got to be a funeral within 2 days. Because this is the tropics, you know, and things spoil in a hurry. Well, as it turns out, the U.S. consulate in whatever Latin country has a deal going with the Latin coroner. And if it's an American who dies, instantly that report gets emailed directly to the nearest U.S. embassy. Again, we're talking about instantly in Latin American terms. That'd be a couple of days. All right, so where were we? Oh, yeah. Talking about that questionnaire that's periodically sent out to all people living overseas, getting U.S. state or federal pension checks, and that includes the U.S. military. So as mentioned, if you don't report certain changes, for example, your own death, your pension and or disability checks or direct deposits just might get cut off. By the way, it says right here, if you have an inability to manage your own funds, you have to report that. Man, most of my own friends and family are in that position. But get this, and Ron the Rebel, this is for you. It does not say anything about reporting that you've suddenly become a citizen of another country. So if you've picked up a second or third passport and nationality along the way, there's no law that says you have to report it back to U.S. officials. By the way, the same thing goes for foreigners who've been in America and have gotten their citizenship and passport. For example, Mexicans. Turns out, and I've heard this from a few sources now, unless you report to the Mexican government that you are now a U.S. citizen too, they're never going to know that. Unless, of course, you use your U.S. passport to go in and out of Mexico. Then it's somewhere in their computers and logged in various places. Anyway, are you getting this? Now, certain retired ex-military people receiving pensions have told me, and they certainly wish to remain nameless. Turns out, quite a few of them have obtained second passports. They never use them, not yet anyway. They just tuck them in a drawer for a rainy day. And you know what Navy guys say? They say, loose lips sink ships. Oh, and by the way, here's something that always makes me laugh. You know, in many Latin countries, they don't allow dual citizenship. Of course, the U.S. does, as does Mexico. But some, for instance, like Guatemala and a few others, technically don't allow it, but they're very lenient on the issue. Meaning, when you have your permanent residency and you've waited out the 5 years to get your passport, you end up in a local Latin immigration court getting sworn in after they've asked you a few questions in Spanish that you won't be able to answer, but they'll let you slide anyway. Well, you know, there'll come a moment when you're asked to raise your hand. That's when the presiding judge will ask you to take an oath to renounce all other citizenships you might have. And you'll raise your hand and say, sí, renuncio. But what that really is just lip service because laws are written that way. And the fact is, you know, you can't renounce your U.S. citizenship by just raising your hand in a Latin court and saying so. To actually do that, you have to go down to a State Department office or your U.S. consulate, fill out a bunch of forms, and have an exit interview with a lard-ass government employee giving you the evil eye the whole time. Because, you know, you're talking to a lifelong bureaucrat and he's going to think you're a traitor. Not only that, you'll have to pay a bunch of IRS penalties and exit taxes in order to leave too. Then you'll get issued an official document that says you are no longer a U.S. citizen. Then and only then have you actually renounced your U.S. citizenship. So if your goal, and it should be your goal, is to get a second passport from a Latin country, just know on that final day when you're sworn in front of a judge in court and he makes you raise your hand, and renounce all previous nationalities and citizenships. It's just a formality and not valid and kind of just a show. All right, shifting gears a bit, here's an email from Kevin. He says, love your show, Johnny, but you generalize an awful lot. In fact, he says, way back in high school in Minnesota, he took a debate and rhetoric class and his teacher had written right on the blackboard. They had blackboards back then, you know. Anyway, the word said, you can't generalize. And every time you do, you're going to lose points. So, Johnny, what do you have to say about that? In fact, I wish I could have got you and my teacher together. I'm sure the debate would be very explosive because he was a dyed-in-the-wool socialist and you're a dyed-in-the-wool libertarian, right? Love the show. Keep generalizing, Johnny. Like that. All right. Thanks for that, Kevin. You know, that's one of the regrets I have in life that I didn't take debate in forensics class way back when. Anyway, my answer to that is if someone says you can't generalize, I say, yes, I can, and that just saying that you can't generalize is the worst kind of generalization in itself. Saying you can't generalize is generalizing that one can't generalize, I guess. But like I always say when I get into a feedback loop, kind of an argument like that, suppose you were walking down the street and suddenly you saw a big-ass tiger walking straight towards you and you remembered that the circus was in town. Would you just keep walking toward it because the shortest distance between you and the nearest Krispy Kreme is a straight line in that direction? Or would you try the nearest door and hope it was open? My guess is 10 out of 10 people would look for an open door, even though that tiger might be tamer than a goldfish and maybe doesn't even have any teeth. So the question is, to generalize or not to generalize? By the way, that's pretty much why everyone walks down the sidewalk instead of the middle of the road. The general consensus is if you're on the sidewalk, you're not going to get hit by a car. However, if you make a habit of walking down the middle of the street, the general consensus is you're eventually going to get hit. Oh, and how about this for a cool gringo business niche? Ran into a gringo in La Ceiba, Honduras. That's the first stop on the way to Roatan. It's where you get the hydrofoil. It takes about an hour to get to Roatan from La Ceiba. Anyway, talk about niches. You know, here in Latin America, especially during the rainy season, clothes do not dry. Now, you got to figure that 95% of Latins don't have a gas or electric dryer, which is why you see clothes hanging out on lines everywhere. And why in the rainy season, it's a tough job to dry them. In the dry season, no problem at all. So in the rainy season, clothes will start drying and then the rains will come and drench them again, right on the line. Mañana time does prevail. Anyway, talk about simple and cheap, an investment of under 10 grand. This gringo set up a little laundromat in La Ceiba. He's got maybe 5 washing machines and 10 dryers. Natural gas dryers converted to propane, of course. And he bought the coin-operated types and had them shipped from the States. Anyway, he told me he's going to order something like 10 more dryers because, you see, people can't dry their clothes effectively half of the year. So in the rainy season, he's got standing room only. You can do them yourself, but he's also got a lady working there. And you can give them to her and she'll wash them, dry them, and iron them too. For a fee, of course. He doesn't even have to pay her. She runs the place for him and gets paid by the people who drop off their clothes for her to do. But here's the cool thing. They're coin-operated, but they only use U.S. 25-cent pieces. And of course, in Honduras, they use lempiras, and no coin will fit those slots. And he's got it set up to use U.S. quarters. But no one's got quarters because they use lempiras, so they got to go to him and buy the quarters. And he sells them 4 quarters for $1.50. So he's making it both ways. $1 on each load plus 50 cents every time he converts their money to quarters. How about that for a niche? Hey, and I know some of you out there are thinking, man, those things have to break down all the time. I mean, it is Latin America, right? Well, the thing is, you see, you don't buy just regular washers and dryers. You buy the commercial types, and the dryers are uncomplicated, have very few moving parts, and rarely break down. It's the washing machines that break down all the time. I mean, hell, they got hoses and pipes and lines and water valves, timers, lint, and dryers have none of that, except for the timers and lint. Yet another story of a gringo who's found his low-tech business niche, and he tells me he couldn't have done it without speaking a little Spanish. And now, after 2 years, he's driving a late model BMW, and that's his only business. Imagine that.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.